Cavalcade of Kings. Edward the Second. The cavalcade of kings rides on, and Edward the First, one of the greatest monarchs England ever knew, rides with them, leaving his son Edward to succeed him on the throne in 1307. Edward the Second was a strange contrast to his father, and though tall, strong, and good-looking, he was effeminate, cowardly, and weak. His love of amusement, pleasure, and vice soon undermined the glorious structure his illustrious father had erected. We find him with his wife Isabella, the French princess, who was said to be the most beautiful woman in the world.
Edward, I cannot bear this intolerable position any longer. Gaveston, the depraved creature that he is, will have to go.
Mind your own affairs, Isabella. Gaveston is my friend, and he shall remain in England as long as I choose.
Your conduct towards me is unspeakable, Edward. You seem to forget that I am your wife and the mother of your son. Your first thought when you and your vile companion were attacked by Lancaster at Newcastle was for Gaveston, your favorite. You both fled, leaving me to defend myself as best I could.
Hold my tongue, lest I have it slit from my mouth. How dare you interfere in my affairs? Poor Gaveston, my friend, my dear, dear friend. To think of him shutting himself up in Scarborough Castle in order to find a little peace from his persecutors, when his place is here at my side. But I'll have him back, I swear it.
Perhaps the Earl of Pembroke and my Lord Earl of Lancaster will have other thoughts on the matter.
I don't know why they detest Gaveston. Jealousy, that's the reason. Black jealousy, nothing more.
Nay, Edward, it is not jealousy. Gaveston's insolent audacity has made him detested by all. His insults to the proud English lords have become insufferable. He refers to my Lord Pembroke as a Jew, and to my Lord Earl of Lancaster as a hog, and to another as the black dog of our den.
Oh, Gaveston was ever a merry fellow.
He has also spoken of me, Queen Isabella, as a French slut.
Oh, and what of it?
It matters not to you, then, that your wife's name be insulted by the foul lips of the perverted wretch upon whom you lavish your extraordinary affections.
Oh, not so much as a bad halfpenny. You are nothing to me. In fact, I've grown to detest the very sight of you. And if Gaveston's wit is not pleasing to you, well, you have your remedy.
You'll regret those words, Edward. Regret them till the day you die. As for the remedy you spoke of, I'll avail myself of it when certain plans I am making are perfected.
What plans?
That is my affair.
Answer me, or I'll lay you stiff and stark upon the rushes beneath my feet.
You would not dare.
Why wouldn't I? I'll show you.
Edward! Edward, stop! Stop! You're killing me!
I'll kill you right enough.
Help! Help! For God's sake,
oh,
help!
God, your majesty! You've gone mad.
I'll teach her not to defy me.
Gracious lady, pray allow me to assist you to your feet.
Thank you, my Lord Earl of Lancaster. The display of bestiality which you have just witnessed is but one of many. All of them the products of a morbid mind, a mind contaminated by the unnatural influences of Pierre's Gaveston.
Gaveston will no longer disturb our peace, lady.
What's that? What's that you say, Lancaster?
I repeat, sire, that Gaveston will no longer disturb our peace.
What have you done with him? Answer me, Lancaster. What have you done with my beloved friend?
His vile head was stricken from his besotted carcass this morning.
Oh, Gaveston, Gaveston, what have they done to thee? A curse upon thy murderers. Guards, guards, to me, rally my soldiers. War, I will make war upon the barons who perpetrated this foul crime.
Sire, sire.
Out of my way, Pembroke, out of my way.
My Lord of Lancaster, I must have speech with the king. I bear grave tidings.
His Majesty would not be interested. What cares he for our country nor the perils which surround us?
What ails him? Why did he shed those crocodile tears?
I have just broken the news of Gaveston's death.
I am afraid his majesty will have to put his grief to one side and hear me.
Pembroke, Pembroke, I want nothing to do with you. Doubtless you played your part well in this foul murder.
Sire, if the news that Robert Bruce is besieging Stirling Castle is of no import to you, I will say no more.
What? Wait! You say Bruce is besieging Stirling Castle?
Yea, sire.
And what of the governor?
He has pledged his word to surrender it, unless he is relieved before a certain day.
Oh, a plague upon this Scottish pest! Have I not enough troubles without him disturbing my peace?
If you had devoted more time to your Scottish possessions, sire, and less to vicious pleasures, Bruce would not now be in the position to dictate to the King of England.
Have a care, Lancaster. I like not thy tone.
Then, sire, I will withdraw from thy presence, for I fear me to remain, lest I speak further words of truth which you will like still less. Come, my Lord Earl of Pembroke. We will leave His Majesty to his grief, and Scotland to the tender mercies of Robert Bruce.
Ah, may God deliver England from her yoke of misery. Lead on, Lancaster. I am ready.
Stop! Stop! You cannot desert me like this. I need your help and the help of your soldiers. Therefore, I command you all to meet me at Berwick in time to relieve Stirling Castle.
And if we refuse, sire, as so many of your nobles whose memory smarts under past indignities and insults will...
To hell with their sufferings. They will meet me at Berwick, or by heaven I'll order a wholesale execution of them.
Brave words, sire, for one whose throne totters beneath him.
What meanest thou?
Time will explain my meaning, sire. Wait and see.
Edward was defeated by Bruce at Bannockburn. Then came plague and famine in England. Still Edward remained unmoved. Later he took another favorite to his heart, one Hugh de Spencer, and gave him and his father vast possessions in Wales. The de Spencers gave great offense to a Welshman named John de Mowbray, and to other Welshmen who rose and took the de Spencers' castles and seized their estates. Then the barons joined the Welshmen and forced Edward to banish the de Spencers. He complied, but later recalled them. Upon this, the nobles and the Welshmen went over to Bruce. Later, Edward avenged himself by beheading the Earl of Lancaster and 28 of his followers. After this bloody deed, he signed a long truce with Robert Bruce and once more took the de Spencers back into greater favor, even making the father Earl of Winchester. Isabella refused to countenance her husband's conduct any longer, and taking her son Edward with her, left for France, where her brother Charles was king. Here she met Roger Mortimer, and sometime later we find Mortimer and Isabella together.
God sent you to me, Roger, in my hour of need, and he has since taught me to love you dearly.
And I would lay down my life for you, beloved.
You are so brave, so noble, so kind, Roger. And when I compare my present happiness with the miserable humiliations and the mental and physical tortures I endured at Edward's hands, oh, Roger, I shudder when I think of
them. Then don't think of them, my sweet. Think only of our love.
I must also think of my son, who will one day rule England.
And the day is not far distant, Isabella.
But his father is still alive.
He can be deposed.
But how?
With the aid of 2,000 French soldiers. And all the English exile in France, whom I know are ready to serve you. And once your army lands in England, the Earls of Kent and Norfolk, together with many other powerful English nobles, will flock to your banner. This they have secretly sworn to do, should you agree to our plan.
And the people?
Will thank God for their deliverance.
But where could we land our troops in England?
At Orwell in Suffolk.
I'll do it, Roger, for my son's sake. And may God send us success.
The Queen's army landed, and the people received the tidings with great joy. The King and his favorites fled to Bristol. But later, after being hunted everywhere, Edward gave himself up and was taken to Kenilworth Castle. And here in the great hall, we now find him facing a deputation of Parliament, headed by Sir William Trussell, Speaker of the House of Commons, and Sir Thomas Blount, Steward of the Household. Sir William speaks.
Edward of England, had ye done but one worthy action,
would have weighed heavily in thy favor at this juncture. But upon thy slate, not one word of such is writ, neither is one writ upon the hearts of men. You commenced your worthless career by breaking a solemn vow made to your dying father, he whose name is blessed by all.
Oh, Sir William, look not so sternly upon me. Oh, pity me, in God's name, pity me, my weakness.
I do not pity thee, Edward, for ye had many chances to retrieve thyself, but rather than heed the wise counsel of decent men, ye preferred the lascivious mouthings of the unnatural creatures who were thy favorites. The parasites ye raised to power. But where are they in this thine hour of need? Answer me, thou king who is a king no longer.
King no longer? King no longer? What meanest thou? I am still a king. Sir Thomas, you tell him that I am still a king. King of England, do you hear?
Thou art no longer king of England. Thy people refuse thee their allegiance, and I, as steward of the household, am bidden to break the white wand.
Oh, no, no! The breaking of the wand is a sign that the king is dead, and I am not dead. No, Edward II of England still lives.
Thou livest, Edward, but King Edward II is dead in name. The white wand is broken.
The king is dead! All the victims!